Good afternoon. Welcome. It's Brian Noonan in for Ro Khanna and DeVellantes. Ro and Anna began their holiday vacation yesterday. I will be with you through January 3rd, whether you like it or not. If you tune in the afternoons, this is what you get. Hopefully you like it. It's probably going to be better than you think. Better than I hope. All right, 312-981-7200. That's the number. That's how you call in. That's how you text. And when you do, you'll be talking to Camille. She is executive producing this broadcast. If you're nice to her, you get to me. That's how it works. If you want to be in touch with us via social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. Look at this. Violetta, you and I here the same as yesterday, and yet here comes everybody. Judy has deigned to come back to the news after her brush with hosting yesterday. She and who was your host? Who'd you host with, Judy?
John Hanson,
he's a good looking man.
He is.
You know, that's why he's on TV.
Yes.
Because he cuts a very...
And radio as well.
Well, sure.
Because as we know, all of us on radio could be on TV.
Gorgeous. Well, we are this hour anyway.
We choose to be on radio.
Sure. I could be major motion pictures, but I choose to be here filling in for Ro and Anna. I
thought you were talking about me there for a second.
Well, sure. Andy's here.
Yeah,
Andy.
Oh, Andy.
Andy
yeah.
came
hey,
in
Andy
today.
Hanson
nice to
Mazur.
See you. Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I'd put this crew up against any show on this station for looks right now.
Yeah, you know,
this current lineup today, boom.
We're looking good.
Yeah.
And the fact is, I wanted to be on this show so much. I worked this morning, too.
Did you really?
Yeah, but I want they dangled the carrot in front of me. They said you can be on with Noonan as well.
I have one adjective for you, Andy: tireless. That is unbelievable.
Talk to me at 5:30.
Yeah, really.
Tire is the right word. Yeah. Tired.
Well, luckily for you that we are shortened today because there's a Northwestern basketball game.
Correct.
So we are
it's
done
a
at
Christmas
5:45.
Miracle.
It is. Judy gets to start eggnogging at 5:45 instead of 7.
Brian, don't be ridiculous. I already started.
Did you? Good. It's Friday. Speaking of that, we have the Carnarvon wagon coming in at 5 o'clock because it's Friday and it's the Ro Khanna Show, and if I didn't have some sort of booze in here, there would be a mutiny. So our friends at Exit Strategy Brewing are coming in, bringing some tasty brews and some delicious food. They'll be here at 5. We'll talk to Tom Skilling, talk to Coach Ditka at 4:40, and comedian Kevin McCaffrey is going to join us after 4 because it's Friday and it's the beginning of the Christmas weekend. And yes, we know that we'll talk to Ben Bradley and get all the, you know, update on some big news stories. And Judy, of course, is covering the news, but I don't want to scream and yell. We know the president signed the tax bill into law today. That's done. Nothing we could do about it right now except open our wallets and bend over. And that's fine. You know, but it's Christmas. So let's.
What do you mean? Didn't you hear the president? It's going to be all good. It's a Christmas present. It's a Christmas miracle.
I heard him. That doesn't mean I actually believe what came out of his mouth. But either way, we all have to do, a lot of people need to do a little more reading up on this, and we'll see what happens.
Right, but the only truth in that statement was, it's Christmas.
It's Christmas, and it was signed into law. Those are the two that you can argue.
That is a fact.
Neither one of those are fake news.
Yeah.
It's Friday.
True.
It's the Christmas weekend, and it was signed into law. Real news across the board. There we go. That's how we start the show, with real news. Now we devolve into frivolity and stupidity for the next, 2.5 hours, which is, that's my stock in trade. Andy, you know that.
I do know that, but I don't begrudge you it because I'm kind of right along with you.
Yeah, there's a time and a place for screaming and yelling. Mm-hmm. This is not the weekend. Violetta, did you do your homework last night and go home and watch It's a Wonderful Life and the animated Grinch?
I ended up, no.
That's not the good one.
All right. Judy is wearing a Grinch t-shirt today. Now, did you understand the significance of that when you saw it, Violetta?
I know what the Grinch is.
Okay. Well, that's from the animated version.
Right, I get that.
That looks like from the book.
It looks like a cartoon.
It does look like a cartoon. Somebody was angry. Didn't think I let you speak yesterday, Violetta. I found that odd since you and Kevin argued for about a half hour.
Yeah.
Uninterrupted. So I don't know.
You could let me speak less. That was. You'll probably help me.
Well, no. I you have a lot to say. So why not let you say it?
All right.
Everybody here has carte blanche to say whatever they want.
Thank you.
You know, if it gets you in trouble, that's on you. You're all we're all adults here, chronologically. So that's perfect.
Technically.
Yeah, that's what they say. So now I am Andy. Are you working 17 shifts the rest of the weekend?
I'll see. Tomorrow I'll be with Harry Tynowitz on the beat.
Okay.
And then Monday is off, and then the next week will be mornings.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Look at you. Good for you. Oh, this is exciting because it is Christmas weekend, the Friday before Christmas. We're giving something away, and nothing says the holidays like crustaceans. That's always been, Camille, you've known that about me for years.
It's true.
It's on my business card. Nothing says the holidays like crustaceans. So in the 4 o'clock hour, I'm going to give you a chance to win a Lobstagram. All you have to do is answer one simple holiday trivia question. So that's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. So sometime between 4 and 5. Some jazzy Christmas bumps. Judy's already been sipping the eggnog. Violetta's dancing. It's going to be a good Friday. Very good Friday.
It already is.
Yes. And we also, not only is it a good Friday because we've got all of that going on, but we get to say hello to Ben Bradley. Hi, Ben. How are you? Uh-oh. Where's Ben? I don't know where Ben is. Ben, are you there? Nope.
Ben doesn't know where Ben is.
I don't know. Something might have Oh, there we go. Sorry, Ben, you there? Nope.
I can see Ben.
I can see Ben, too. I see him there, too. I don't know. I'm looking at... No, I don't think so.
He's trapped in a box.
Is he
right
there?
Now, yes.
What's he wearing?
He's wearing a beautiful suit and a green tie. Oh, man, everything should be all set. I don't know. You there? No? No? Just keep talking, Ben. This is... Oh, it's a nightmare.
I think he's trying to tell you something. Knock, knock. No,
he's knocking. Do you hold up a sign, Ben? Do you have some sort of writing? Brett is fixing it. All right, let's see. This is very exciting. I like just watching. Ben is a professional because look at him. He's still talking.
He's pantomiming.
He's talking nonstop. It is a beautiful. There's a beautiful.
He knows he's on camera.
He's on selector too.
That's for sure.
Everything is turned up.
There he is.
Hey.
Christmas miracle.
We can hear you.
Wow. This is truly a Festivus miracle.
I'll tell you what, Ben. This was your professionalism knows no bounds.
Thank you. And for those of you who couldn't see us pantomiming on CLTV, it's definitely worth a replay.
It is.
No doubt you all DVR it.
And I love the fact that there's the blown plastic snowman behind you, the molded plastic snowman. Very festive on the set there.
WGN is a very classy news operation. I'm not sure enough people give us credit for the class. So we have the... giant plastic snowman on our assignment desk. There's a dancing reindeer. I don't know if you caught the WGN morning news today, but I thought, you know, I'm still new here. I'm learning the ropes. And
sure.
Holiday scheduling, especially in newsrooms, is very tough. You know, you got a lot of moving parts and whatnot. And sometimes you have to request Christmas off like a year in advance. Okay.
And you haven't been there a year, so you're out of luck.
So this morning I witnessed Dan Ponce, our early morning anchor, hand Sarah Jindra a case of Miller Lite on the air.
Wow.
And Jindra's like, yep, I'll work for you on Christmas. So
nice.
That's how it works here at WGN.
So what did you are you working Christmas, or what did you have to pay to get it off? What's the going rate for nighttime Christmas?
You know, Lourdes is being very kind, and she is working on Christmas. Oh, now she just came out of her office yelling,
here
you
we
owe
go.
Me a case of beer.
Yeah, Lourdes, hold out for something. Hold out for a craft beer, too.
Yeah, it's a craft beer.
Maybe go she's some classy, Goose Island or something.
Yeah, she got me a giant... Yeah, she says, none of this cheap stuff.
Wow.
She got me for Christmas the biggest bottle of Tito's I've ever seen.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. And people would think, well, since we couldn't hear him, perhaps he was dipping into it. But no, something was going on, and you just kept working. So is that, now what do you have to do for Lourdes for the big bottle of Tito's? Do you have to cover every other holiday for her?
Yeah, I don't know what I have to do. Don't give her any ideas. She's in her office back there listening to all
of course.
This. Yeah.
All right, we'll get her. Listen, you guys work it out. I think it's nice. You know what we got here for Christmas from our coworkers, Ben?
What?
Nada. Nothing.
Ro didn't give you anything for filming
today? Nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Look under the desk there. Maybe there's some old gum. Yeah.
I'll root around his office. They leave it unlocked.
You get to work with Violetta. I mean, that's kind of the gift that keeps on giving.
Violetta. Right?
Aw, thank you.
And Judy's here, and Andy's here, and Camille. So we're all here. Nobody needs it. You know what? We do it for the love of the game, Ben.
Doesn't she have enough seniority to have, like, the entire month of December off?
I know, right? And what happened? I took too many days off this year. So they say.
Judy, don't you have a ledger or something where you keep these days written down?
I sat there. I was like, and? I'm over 18 days. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, I had to work, Ben.
Well.
Woe is me.
Yeah. She's up there breaking rocks, Ben. You know how it is.
Tell you what, we're all digging ditches here.
It's very tough
work. Breaking a sweat.
Judy, she looks like she's been out in the hot sun. She looks like she was in a scene from Cool Hand Luke throwing asphalt all over.
This is the first time in maybe 25 years I've worked, like, around Christmas.
But the real question is, did you get so much enjoyment out of all the other time off that you took earlier this year that it's worth it?
You know, there's a lot of good food and drinks here, so that's all I'm going to say. No, I should have saved some more time.
Yeah. We won't bring up, Ben, you probably have nice coffee up there on Bradley Place, correct?
No, actually, it's pathetic. There's a vending machine coffee here.
See, Judy, it's not as bad.
We're out of here, too. What happens? Everyone gets to leave it, too, but those of us who have to stay, we have no coffee.
So the coffee story here is when Mark Sapelsa sent out his email to the entire newsroom announcing that he was retiring. Within like 6 minutes, the reply all, you know, from some people was, oh no, we're so sorry, oh, you know, this is awful. Lourdes Duarte, my co-anchor, replies all, can I have your Keurig coffee maker?
Yeah, don't even wait till the body is cold.
On Mark's last day, he gave her the Keurig. So that's how we do coffee here. It's like hand-me-down.
You got it, and you have to go. Now you have to go beg Lourdes for a good cup of coffee.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Exactly.
Well, listen, there's probably a news story or two we should mention.
Mm-hmm.
This was interesting. The Cook County jail population has dropped to the lowest level in decades. They're saying that's a result of judges being told, listen, you have to set bond that people can actually afford. So is this, as you're hearing, is this good? Is this bad? Is it just, this is the way it goes?
Well, it's good in that, you know, people aren't spending sometimes more than they would if they were convicted and sentenced to a crime, you know, in jail awaiting a trial, which you saw a lot with kind of lower level offenses and nonviolent offenses. People would not be able to afford, you know, $1,000 bond or $5,000 cash bond. And so they would wind up just staying at the jail. I can remember a couple of years ago when that jail population was up to 10,000 people. Today, it hit a low of 6,000. So think about that. You know, basically, you know,
just about 40% half,
fewer people are inside that jail. The effect inside the jail, I was over there a couple of months ago, and it's eerie. You can walk into some of these cell houses, the tiers they call them, and they're entirely empty.
Huh.
And, you know, just all the cell doors are open. It's quiet. It's eerie. And they have been able to consolidate inmates and shut down entire wings of the jail. That saves them on some staffing costs and, you know, other things like that. So,
and have we heard a result? Has it changed any levels or recidivism or conviction rates now that more of these people are getting these lower bonds and getting out on their own recognizance?
Couple of months that the court system actually began to implement these policies that say, hey, let's factor in what the defendant can actually afford to post when we set bonds. So I think it's a great question you raise, and that is, you know, as more people get out of jail more quickly, what is the effect?
Mm-hmm.
Do they go back out and commit crimes while they're awaiting trial for other crimes? That's going to be something
to watch. It's going
to
be interesting to see those numbers come out. Another interesting thing, we have our first lawsuit in the Apple Apple admission yesterday that, they were, you know, the updates are maybe slowing things down to save battery life. So now we've got five customers filing a lawsuit in federal court today in Chicago to see Apple not really responding to the lawsuit yet, correct?
But isn't that interesting? Because, you know, so Apple's point is, yes, we have to slow down some things because otherwise the battery life would drain incredibly quickly and the phone would just shut down. I mean, isn't that like saying, hey, newer apps are bigger and more complex and they take up room, and so therefore, you know, Apple is in cahoots with those making the apps to require us to buy phones with, you know, capable of holding larger apps. You know, part of it is just kind of the evolution, I think, of technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're willing to settle for a phone that can only hold 10 pictures and operate, you know, six apps, you know, I guess keep your iPhone too.
Yeah, I think they're so the suit is saying that Apple needlessly subjects consumers to purchasing newer and more expensive phones when a replacement battery could have allowed them to keep going. And they're saying that now. They came out yesterday when they admitted that, yes, we're slowing things down, but you can't, if you just get a new battery, that'll probably fix everything, fix all the issues.
And I'm not versed enough in how the iPhone works, how easily and how cost-effective it is to swap out batteries, especially on some of those older iPhones. It's certainly not like
It wasn't like the old days where you could just pop the back off your phone and put the battery in there.
Exactly.
So what's coming up on the big broadcast tonight?
We are keeping an eye, of course, on the holiday rush.
Yes.
Our Dana Rebick is up at O'Hare. It started with kind of a scary moment early this morning at Terminal 3. There was a large semi-truck that was parked. The driver was nowhere to be found outside of the American Airlines terminal there. They brought in the bomb dogs thinking the worst because, first of all, trucks aren't supposed to go up there.
Right.
And there was nothing sinister. I heard whether or not police have found the driver and talked to him about why he chose to do that. It's, I think, about 7 o'clock in the morning on the busiest airline travel day in Chicago.
Yeah, not good timing. Well, we will be watching tonight. Have a wonderful Christmas. Good luck with the virtual reality Star Wars game that you told us about yesterday.
If you're... Not to mention the Tito's.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Tito's and then virtual reality. We may not talk to you till next year. Have fun,
Merry
Ben.
Christmas,
Merry
guys.
Christmas.
Good to be with you.
Thanks very much. That was Ben Bradley. Now, did you play that just because Judy read Tom's forecast?
Maybe.
That we might have some snow coming up on Sunday?
Maybe.
It's very exciting.
Is it?
Yes.
Is it?
Just on Christmas. I don't care about any other time.
Exactly.
Christmas.
Well, all right. I'll give you that. I'm all for it. It's Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna. Speaking of snow and speaking of the man who got Camille and Judy all excited on many levels, Tom, hi, how are you?
Brian, how are you? Hello, Judy and everybody.
Hello. Yeah. Hello, snowman.
I know. We've
no,
been...
yesterday you didn't mention the snow, Tom.
You're right.
There was no snow yesterday.
You know what happened, Brian? A couple of our global models have locked onto a little disturbance we were sending south of us last night, bringing it a little farther north.
Okay.
And there's not a lot of moisture in it. You know, maybe in water equivalent terms, 1/10 to 1/15 of an inch. But you know what? The temperatures we've got on Sunday, this will fluff up and could mean several inches of snow. And you define a white Christmas as an inch of snow on the ground at 6 a.m. in the morning. That's the conventional definition.
Okay.
So while it won't be snowing Christmas Day, it will have snowed Sunday from the looks of things right now. And that raises the possibility of several inches of snow. And, you know,
wow.
Yay!
Isn't that nice? It's nicely timed. And I think a lot of people feel like Judy, you know, they want nothing to do with snow.
Right.
And yet they will allow us, you know, just for aesthetics, to have snow over the holiday period. And that's
well, that's good.
Nice.
If it comes on Sunday, then you can get everything cleaned up before you have to go traveling on Christmas Day.
Well, that's right.
So that's good.
Christmas Day will be well. The interesting second feature in terms of snowfall, by the way, we are in the midst of a record low snow year. We have a major snow drought underway. We've had 2.1 inches of snow for this season. But since the 1st of January, the calendar year has only produced a little over 11 inches of snow at Midway Airport. That's the lowest city snow total for a year to date that we've had in all the years that we've measured snow out at Midway Airport, and that goes back to 1929. So this is truly unusual. We should have had about three times the 11 and a half inches of snow that we've had so far.
See, when you say it like that, I think, oh, I picture it all coming at once. So 33 inches of snow, I don't need any of that, Tom. I don't.
Well, that's up our seasonal totals up in the range of the mid 30s,
right.
for a season, and as it turns out, for the calendar year too.
And what's the technical term for the season, or where does it go? When does it start and end?
Well, the snow season starts with the first flurries, which can come as early as late September in rare years.
Okay.
More commonly, they occur in late October and or November, and then the snow season will run through March and into April in some years. So that's your conventional snow season.
Okay.
But the calendar year is the amount of snow that falls from January 1, which is really takes in half the preceding season and half this current season when you look at it that way. And we don't often look at it that way, but it is interesting. So many people figured that the snow falls really off this year. And we decided to look at that. And our Frank Wachowski and Steve Kahn here, my colleagues, combed through the records, and those are the numbers we come up with.
Well, you've made a lot of people happy, Tom, and we'll get the full forecast in a little bit. I know people are... Camille, when she heard your forecast, she threw her hands in the air. It was... I don't know. I didn't know if she scored a touchdown or what was going on in there, but she was very, very excited.
I heard a hallelujah.
Yeah.
Well, it's got to happen now.
A rare glimpse of optimism from Judy, which...
I smiled, Tom.
Yeah, Tom.
Smiled.
I know.
It was weird.
Good for Judy. I thank you, Judy, for cutting us snow enthusiasts a little slack there. You know, that's good. Because there are a lot of folks, and there are folks who plow snow, who like cross-country
skiing. Oh, yeah, they want to make some money.
Snowmobile and so forth. I mean, you know, this has really been disappointing to the folks who like snow. But I think, folks like some snow for the holidays, too. And so here it comes.
Now, Christmas is Monday, Tom. When you were growing up, or even now, do you have some sort of Christmas traditions that you adhere to?
Oh, you know, my parents were so marvelous. They made Christmas such a special day. And so you just have warm feelings. Now, my older age, I look at it a little differently. And yet it's funny. I remember my mother always saying she still got a high out of Fridays, even though she wasn't in the workforce or anything like that. But she said she remembered when she was and how, looked, it seemed like such a wonderful day. And she said she never lost that. And I thought, you know, that's true.
That's a great point.
Yeah, there's kind of a built-in psychology to the holidays and to Christmas and all the holidays, Hanukkah, all the holidays we have around here. And, of course, New Year's and New Year's Eve. So I think a lot of folks like this. It's kind of a family time.
It is. And I know you're going to be getting together with all sorts of people on Monday, having a big celebration, as you always do.
Yes. We've got my roommate, Sean Lewis, who works with me here at WGN, one of my roommates, and his family is coming down. There are members up in Wisconsin, some in Minnesota, so they're coming in and Sean's cousin and her husband live upstairs with their two little children, so they're coming down. And I have Jennifer, our artist, one of our artists here who works on the Tribune page. She's coming over, so we're going to have a gang.
Nice.
And, and you can come, Brian.
That's right. I appreciate
it. I suspect you probably have your own goings on.
We're going to my brother is hosting Christmas for the first time this year. So my nieces get to stay home, which when you have little kids, I think that's easier.
It is nice.
Keep the kids get to stay home around their own stuff, and they don't have to get dressed and go out, it'll be very nice.
Set up the Christmas tree and the lights the rest. It is kind of a nice holiday to be home, and for many people. So at any rate, you have a good time, Brian.
Yes, we will. Thank you very much. All right, let me ask you this before we go. Now, yesterday you said you give some experiences. You're planning on giving some wonderful gifts. Do you remember over the years, and you don't have to go back to when you were a kid, is there one Christmas gift that stands out to you that you went, man, no matter how old I get, I will always remember this was like my favorite Christmas gift ever?
You know what, Brian? I wouldn't even begin to pick one gift. It just seemed like the whole holiday experience was fun.
You were always on the nice list, Tom, so Santa probably loaded you up. It didn't matter.
Well, the coal was in the stockings, anyway.
Did you get, when you were a young wannabe meteorologist when you were a kid, did you get any meteorological gifts for Christmas?
Oh, yeah. I remember getting a barometer, a prize barometer, and a sling psychrometer.
Wow.
There's a gift that ought to be in every weather meteorologist's stocking, even at a young age.
A sling psychrometer?
Psychrometer, yeah. What that is it's like a piece of metal on which two mercurial thermometer bulbs are attached.
Okay.
And you put a wick over one of them, and then you sling it through the air. There's a handle that it's attached to, and you compare the readings after 3 or 4 minutes of doing that, and you get what's called the wet bulb reading and the dry bulb reading.
Oh, wow.
And cooling occurs through evaporation from that wick, so if you've got a really dry atmosphere, the wet bulb reading is going to be much lower than the dry bulb reading, and then you go to a table called a psychometric table, and you can determine the relative humidity. Sounds fun, doesn't it?
If you're a scientist, it sounds great. I couldn't feel dumber right now, Tom.
My head hurts.
I feel like I know nothing.
I know. And now we don't use sling psychrometers so much. We have electronic.
Well, that's a shame. It sounds like fun.
Oh, it was. The only thing is you had to be careful because you could easily break these little very fragile mercurial thermometers, and then you'd have little bubbles of mercury all over the floor. Remember that? Remember the games where you could have little bubbles of mercury in them and you tried to manipulate it? It was under a cover.
And you tried
to get the little bubbles of mercury to collect in particular ones, and you got a number of points based on which one the mercury gathered in. And So this, unfortunately, when you broke one of your thermometer bulbs, it was all over the place, and there was no prize for that.
Oh,
classic
not at all.
Thermometer bulbs breaking.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's that was the crucial problem with the thermometer balls. Tom, can you give us a forecast before you head off into this wonderful season?
Well, tonight there could be a few sprinkles. We've been mild. This is the eighth consecutive day we've been above normal. We made it nearly up to 40, and some spots got over the 40 today. But that's the last day of that for a while. You know, this cold air coming in is, I'd call it moderate intensity this weekend. This is not a barbaric Arctic outbreak, though the cold will intensify by Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. Then it lets up a little for that next snow system, and another little surge comes in next weekend. But after that, there are signs this cold may moderate a little bit there. So tonight, cloudy, couple of sprinkles and flurries. By morning, the clouds ought to break, and tomorrow we'll actually see patches of blue sky and sunshine. So it'll be cold, but at least the sun will be out, and the winds don't look terribly strong. So this will be manageable. We'll have a high tomorrow going in, probably starting at 34 and falling back to the mid-20s by nightfall. And then mid-20s on Sunday with the snow. It'll cloud over tomorrow night, snow at times Sunday, and maybe several inches. And Christmas Day about 25 and partly sunny. And then Tuesday, a blustery northwest wind, only 16. So it'll bite, the cold will, on Tuesday and Wednesday. And there might be a flurry Christmas night or a little light snow with a little fast-moving disturbance. But it's later next week. We'll have to watch. The models have been all over the map. Some of them don't open up the Gulf very much. But I do think we'll have some sticking snow. And in a year when we haven't had much, I mean, that snow on Sunday could be the biggest snow of the season if we get a couple inches.
Well, you'll make a lot of people happy if that's the case.
Yeah.
And, Tom, I wish you a really wonderful Merry Christmas.
You too, Brian.
Thank you for all you do here, and I will talk to you next week.
Yeah, and, Brian, next Christmas, I'm going to get you a psychometric table.
I hope so.
And a sling psychrometer. I'm going to get Violetta one of each as well.
Promises.
We'll see if he comes through, Violetta. Well, Tom, Merry Christmas.
It is
always a pleasure, and we will talk to you next week.
To you as well, Brian, and Merry Christmas, Violetta, and
Merry Christmas.
To you next week, guys.
Take care. All right, that's the wonderful Tom Skilling. You hear him every day here with Roan Anna. Let's do this. Took a detour from our Christmas bumps. That's all right. Plus, we have a guest who's now going, what kind of show have I wandered into? They interrupt the news to have a monkey conversation, and then somehow Gidget from the movies comes up. It's great.
Yeah.
It's Friday. As we said, Kevin McCaffrey is here. He's a wonderful comedian. He is in town this weekend at Zany's downtown for a very special reason, which we'll get to in a minute. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. You're from here. You're from Chicago.
I am. I'm originally, I'm like most people who say they're from Chicago.
Right.
I'm actually from Hinsdale. So,
of course.
I'm from about a half hour west and back in town to record my first album this Saturday at Zany's.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, it's fun. I really like that room. So.
Now, you've been doing comedy for a long time. What held up the process for the first album? Or you just had no desire? Or?
Yeah, I have no desire.
No
just
desire
in
to make
general,
an album?
Like you can fill in the blank after that.
Just,
yeah, I think.
Lazy?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's just, basically, it got to the point where oftentimes, you know, most comedy clubs will be set up. You have the MC, then there's a guy that goes in the middle, then there's the headliner. And the guy in the middle would always be like selling t-shirts with puns on it. And then people come to me and be like, what can I buy? And it's like the experience you just had. I don't know.
Yes, you laughed for 45 minutes.
Yes,
that should be enough.
So it's nice to, now it's nice to have something to, you know, to give them, if that's what I mean, for money. But that, and then there's just like a lot of stuff at this point, you know, you did stand up for a long time, that I believe in and works, but I'm ready to never say again in my life.
See, and that's it. Now, so you'll cut the album, and then it'll be out there, and then you start from scratch, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you have a ton of stuff in... You know,
I have a passable amount of stuff. I will not have to retire the day after the
album
is recorded.
Thank goodness.
Yes, right.
That would be very bad.
Yes, exactly.
If Sunday was your last day.
Yes. Have to move on to go taking care of John Fox's monkey. And,
listen, the dead monkey. Rest in peace. Pour one out for the monkey
geez,
that
Louise.
Can't be with us. That was very sad.
Well, that is a news break in that sense. Yes.
Andy brought down the whole show with that news. It was horrifying. So how did you get to, we'll ask the typical question, because parents of people who do stand up are asked this. How did he get into this? Because didn't we raise him better?
my mom is super psyched about it, about what I'm doing. Basically, there's, as you know, it's like there are I don't have any of the other skills that would go into another job. So in this one, you work roughly 45 minutes a day. If there's two shows, like there's two shows tonight and Saturday, we're talking an hour and a half now.
But thank you for making the effort to come here, because your grueling schedule later is probably going to wipe you out.
Yes, this. I mean, I'm mostly wiped at this point. But yeah, so I basically went to I did a radio show in high school, and then I went to college with
our lovely producer, Camille.
Our lovely producer, Camille, here, who the musical sting there that she played was the intro song to the show we did in college.
That makes sense.
Yes, I did it a long time ago, and that's the song I had when I did stand-up on Letterman. Mm-hmm. They ask you, when they book you for the show, they say, what would you like Paul to play you on with? So you get to pick your song.
Well, that's exciting.
And we did that, yeah.
Now, we'll jump around, because you were, not only were you on Letterman as a stand-up, you were on there as an actor, and you were also a monologue writer on Letterman. So you're at Ball State and you're studying. What was your major?
Well, I was at Ball State.
Well, you were at Ball State. What was your alleged major?
It was TV production.
Okay, so you're in the field. You're at least, you know.
I found and I walked at graduation, but I later found out I didn't graduate.
Is that right?
Yes, that is true. It's some sort of weird technicality. They wrote me a letter later. I'm like, well, I already did it.
Yeah,
I've
got the picture.
Yeah, exactly. What else do you need?
I shook the president's hand. I'm done.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have to go back, or are you still?
No, they invited me to go back and reapply to drop a minor. They wouldn't give me a creative writing credit because instead of taking a poetry course, I was interning at Letterman, at which I wrote.
Yeah, couldn't you just send them your resume? You see, I write every day.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing it, right? Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you started at Letterman as an intern.
Yes. So my last college credit, I was I got the writer's internship at Letterman.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be, it's a dream for so many people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And you get there, is it an intimidating process when you walk into the Letterman studios?
Yeah, for me it was, especially because if people used to watch Letterman, you know a lot of the people they used on air were just staffers that were not actors. So you walk in the door and Biff Henderson's there. Who's there? Yeah, there was a guy who was known as Mailroom Bob at the time, who was no longer working in the mailroom. He was the writer's assistant at that point. So he conducted the interview with me. So for a Letterman super fan, it's just like going to Disney World.
Yeah,
and basically it's like Donald Duck interviews you, you know. It's that was very intimidating at the time, and it's like a 3-hour long interview. It's a whole thing.
Wow. And what responsibilities does an intern have?
Well, it's a lot of photocopying and running those photocopies around to different people. I remember, and then they'll send you out to buy things that they don't want to buy themselves, basically.
Oh, sure.
Things like that. But they specifically told me that, you know, if you're the writer's intern, don't think you're going to be writing top tens. That's not what happens. Yeah. You're assisting. And then one day, Dave just saw the top 10 as he was walking out to the stage, and he crossed out the whole thing. He was just nope, new one. And so everyone was panicking, and I would just, when I'd be covering phones during the show as an intern, I would just write on whatever the top 10 topic was for that day to keep my brain from atrophy.
Yes, sir.
And so the Mailroom Bob ran up in a panic trying to get the writers to write a new round of top 10s, and he saw me writing and was like, what is that? And I was like, nothing. I'm not overstepping my bounds.
Sorry,
for sure.
Anything.
And he took it, and he handed it to the head writers, and then I think that first list I got number 9 and number 1 on, and then they were like, just keep writing, you know?
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So that's a wonderful story.
Yeah. It's a very old showbiz kind of thing.
It is.
You know?
Hey, that kid over there.
Yeah, exactly.
He did it, bring him on.
Yeah, I like the look of it. Look,
the cut of his jib. Yeah. And now you're. So that then leads to a job?
Yeah, eventually. So basically, it's that. I was writing under the table, and then I was a page, which is, you know, if you watch 30 Rock, basically the Kenneth the Page role, you wear a uniform and you run around and tell, you know, smile people, and then you secretly judge them on their looks and their energy. And then if they have good energy, you get them to sit towards the front and stuff like that. It's a whole thing. And then I was a freelance monologue writer after that. And
very nice. Mm-hmm. And then now, while you were in New York as the freelance monologue writer, is that when you begin stand-up? Or had you done it in Indiana as well?
Yeah. Well, in Indiana, I just did the college TV show that was called BSU Late Night. And that's BSU Tonight when Camille was on it and running it. And so that was all I did in college. Then went out and I was just writing at Letterman for a couple of years, for probably 2-3 years before I started doing stand-up out there.
Very nice. Kevin McCaffrey is here. He will be at Zany's on Wells of tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday night. Tomorrow night, two shows you are recording, your very first album. Do you have a name for the album yet?
I believe we do. It's probably going to be nice and drunk. Wife says those are two words that describe me.
Yeah,
so.
You seem nice, and I don't know about the drunk part, but we'll see later.
We're right now's hangover zone. All right. we're in the cycle.
All right, so you're cordial and hungover.
Yes, exactly.
That might be the second album.
Yeah.
Kevin McCaffrey's here. If you want tickets, go to zanies.com. You can see him either tonight or Saturday, but tomorrow night's the big money night. Go and see him record his first album. Comedian Kevin McCaffrey is here. He is at Zany's on Wells Street this weekend, tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. And tomorrow is Saturday. Why do I think?
But you're correct twice. That's good.
All right, tonight and Saturday. Two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow. Tomorrow night's the big deal. That's why you're here. You're recording your very first comedy album.
Yes.
Did you pick Zany's on purpose? Because there's a lot of great clubs in the country. Zany's obviously one of them.
Totally.
But was there something about Zany's that you said, well, I want to record here?
Yeah, it's if not my favorite club, it's one of my very favorites. And it's growing up in this area, it was the one where you would hear comedians talk about, you know? So I feel like it has that sort of place in my heart from growing up, being like, oh, comedians go
and
to
that's
Zany's
where
when
the
they come
big,
through
yeah,
town.
Yeah, the big names always went to Zany's.
Yeah, and it's a great room, and I do it every year. Around one of the holidays, and I thought for the first album coming home to do it would be nice.
That's very cool. Do you like the intimacy of that room as opposed to some of the newer rooms in some places are big, the 300 seats?
Yeah, a lot of the rooms that are 300 seats aren't having people there.
No, there's like 40 people.
It's just you get there and you just feel bad they had to set up all the chairs. It's like it feels like a very visual example of you not doing well.
Exactly.
Even if there's 150 people there, which is a good amount of people to hear you tell stories.
Sure.
You know?
And then they'll go around and blow out the candles in the back. And that makes you feel like during your set, they're blowing out candles. You go, no, just leave them lit. I'm still...
Let's have a little hope here.
Right.
Let's
keep
the romantic vibe. Yeah. I do like the Zany's downtown. It feels old school. The ceiling is very low. There's a piano that no one has used in 25 years, you know? And it's packed in tight, like very, you know, fire hazardy, which I like.
For people who don't understand it, laughter, it travels when your people are packed in.
Right.
So you can really get them on a roll.
Yeah, and it's nice when and it's a good dark room too. Mm-hmm. So it's nice when people don't feel like the lights are on them, or if they're laughing, people can really single out that it's them laughing, because people get worried about like being judged for what they're laughing on and stuff. So it's a nice room, and the shows have been great so far this week. We've been there since Monday, and two more tomorrow.
Nice. So you're getting all these shows in to kind of warm up. Are you going to do two different sets tomorrow, or will you do the same at both shows and just and then edit the two together?
They'll be a little different, but I have an idea basically what order I want to do things in, and then ideally we nail it on the first one and get weird on the second, you know.
Well, good luck. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
So that's tomorrow night, zanies.com to get tickets. If we can, I know a lot of people want to hear more about Letterman because it's fascinating, and you spent time there. What's it like when you get, you're working at Letterman, you're a freelance monologue writer, and they say to you, hey, we want you to come on and do stand-up. Is this something you had been lobbying for? And what was the process? Because Dave was notorious for not wanting a lot of stand-ups on the show.
Right. There would really only be one like once every 2 weeks or so. And then so if there's one every 2 weeks, and then Gaffigan does it four times a year, Seinfeld does it three.
Regan
whenever he wants. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that makes sense. But then there's not a lot of spots for the new guys.
So how does a Kevin McCaffrey end up walking out of that curtain and going, hey, here I am?
It takes a long time. At first, the guy who was booking did not, I think, felt uncomfortable for some reason having someone who'd done things for the show also come on the show in that way.
Okay.
Then he stopped booking it, and then the new bookers asked me, would you want to do that? And I was like, yes, I would like to do that. So I auditioned, and the audition process is really weird because they're short sets. And as you know, when you're doing stand-up, it's usually doing an hour in a headline set, and these things are 5 minutes. So you go in the audition, they wanted you to do 7 TV clean minutes, and then they transcribe your set and highlight what they approved.
Okay.
Joke by joke. And then so they approved like 4.5 minutes the first time. And then I went back with a couple new minutes, then they approve the set, and you send them a tape of that going well, and then
would they go through it word for word too in a joke? Maybe we like this joke about, like, on your Letterman set, you did some jokes about going to church with your mom on Christmas.
Right.
And would they go through it word by word and say, yeah, this one you need to change a little bit?
For me, I have heard them doing that. I heard one friend of mine, they just told him to do a new punchline to a joke. And it's like, I think you just don't like that joke. Like,
do
what
a new punchline.
I mean, it's such a weird thing to be like, yeah. I like that joke except for the part that you think is funny.
Right.
The funny part I don't like.
The premise is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm a real setup fan. Yeah, it's a weird,
wow.
Yeah, weird note to get. But a friend of mine got that. For me, I was pretty lucky. They didn't change around any of the wording of the jokes. They just wanted me to swap my closer out for the one before it.
Oh,
so
okay.
They just want me to change the order, but that's it.
And how nerve-wracking is it? I know that might seem like a stupid question.
No.
But people are like, well, these comics all seem pretty calm when they walk out from behind the curtain.
Right. Well, it should be nerve-wracking, right? Like, the auditions were probably as close to nervous as I get, just because, you know, you don't want to blow it.
Sure.
But I woke up that day, and I just wasn't nervous, because in my head, it's a very zen thing, but I was just thinking, okay, in the story of my life, this has to go well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we are retiring. This is... You know, it would be horrific. So
don't want to be the guy who bombs on Letterman.
No, you don't. And it was just, it's so surreal that it almost, that I couldn't be nervous. Because it's like, this is, you know, whatever, like, I'm getting my makeup done next to John Goodman. And my green room is next to Iggy Azalea. It's just like very weird, a very weird day. And as John Goodman was walking off, he was like, break a leg, Kev. And I said, thanks, John. And at that point, you're just like, well, this isn't a real thing.
Right. Yeah, this is all make-believe.
Right. And then once you go out there, Dave, you know, Dave tells the crowd this guy's gonna be funny. He's like, so the crowd believes him.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's nice.
And it had to be nice. He came over to you at the end of the set and you had a nice little exchange.
Yes, which they told me definitely would not happen.
Wow.
They told me, okay, when you finish, just stand there.
Okay.
Dave will approach you from behind. Don't worry, he won't talk to you. It's fine. He'll just plug your thing. But then he did talk to me for a minute and I just sort of blacked out, you know.
That's
but
great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had you had any interaction with him in all your time working there prior to that?
100% of my interaction with him was on air. Was there when I interned, I played you know, random character to run out onto the set a couple of times. I played an intern who ran out to my mom, and I think I told her, you know, please take me away from here. Take me, you know, I should have gone to Conan and was screaming as security dragged me off. So I did stuff like that.
Okay.
But that was it. We didn't, you know, no kicking it at lunch or anything.
No.
With Dave, but yeah.
Well, listen, you've come a long way and circled back home. And now tomorrow night at Zany's, you're there tonight for two shows. Zany's on Wall Street.
Yep.
Zany's.com for tickets. Tomorrow night, the two shows are at 7 and 9:30?
7 and 9.
7 and 9.
7 and 9 p.m.
And you will be recording your first album, which is very, very exciting. For all Kevin's information, go to kevin-mccaffrey.com. You can find out all about Kevin, where he's going to be. But tomorrow night, go there, laugh out loud. You'll be part of a recording. It's going to be historic.
It'll be your album too.
Yes.
Use it as a credit.
You'll still have to pay for it, but you'll be invested in it somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very nice. Well, good luck tomorrow night.
Thanks for coming in.
It was very nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's do this. Then it's the big story with Judy after this. WGN. Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna. Kicking off your Christmas weekend. Sometime this half hour, I'm going to give you a chance to win a crustacean-based prize. Very valuable. Oh, it's a delicious lobster, Graham. I'll have that for you sometime before 5 o'clock. And then after 5 o'clock, the Knarble Wagon will roll with our friends from Exit Strategy Brewing. So that'll be fun. We'll do that. But first, you know, the Bears are playing the Browns on Sunday, Christmas Eve game. The Browns haven't won a game. The Bears not doing a whole lot better. I don't know what to make of it. Coach Mike Ditka joins us right now, as he does every Friday here on the Roll Con Show. Coach, thanks for taking some time today. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We are fantastic. Is it tough to get a team motivated to play on a New Year's Eve or a Christmas Eve where their minds are, you know, they're thinking about going with their families or getting away? Is it a little tougher on a day like this than it is on another Sunday?
I don't think so, really. If you're committed to your job, you know, you get paid for doing what you're doing.
Right.
You get paid money to play football. So, you know, go out there and play football. Do it the best you can. Do the best job you can. We're playing the worst team in football. You know, so I'm saying, you know, is it the biggest thing in the world to win this game? I think it's pretty darn big to win this game, really. And you got to start something anew. You got to start from scratch right now.
Mm-hmm.
You got to try something together and get some confidence back up, and then go from there. But you know, this year is basically a write-off, and they know that. And so you play these games hard. You try to win out and see what you got to build on, and you go from there. But Cleveland is a horrible team and a horrible organization.
Now, you mentioned that, and we all know that. Is it? And again, we know that players are paid a lot of money. They're professionals. They're supposed to do this. In your experience, have you ever come across guys who are looking at a team, they haven't won anything. This should be a cakewalk. We should be able to just go out there and run right over them and have that backfire on them?
Well, sure. I mean, that happens a lot. But, I mean, you don't want to think anything's a cake ride right now. I mean, the Bears have had problems. They had problems executing. And this would be a step in the right direction to get some confidence back, to get the confidence level back. You know, Cleveland's not a good football team. I don't know how to put it any other way than that. I could sugarcoat it and do this and do that. They haven't been a good football team for a lot of years, and right. The reason is they're making bad decisions at the top, and as a result, they're suffering.
Coach, how tough is it, too? I mean, these guys are playing right now, and there's all this talk about John Fox and his job and the coaching staff. I mean, what are these guys looking at right now? I mean, can they actually be evaluating, or is it evaluation coming now from the GM who pretty much we think he's going to be back next year?
Well, I think so. It'll probably come more from the GM right now. But listen, I think people are going overboard to say get rid of John Fox. John Fox is a good coach. He's proven that. Players play, coaches coach. I had good players when I coached. That's why we won. You know, there's no magic to coaching. You put the right people in the right places and you let them play. But if you put the wrong people in the right places and they don't play, you're going to take the heat too. So just the way it is. I mean, right now, the Bears, I would like to see them go out there and try to finish this thing out on a high note. Play with some pride, play with some confidence, try to get a couple wins. But, you know, to sit here and say John's gone, I mean, why? I don't know how many plays John played this year. I watched him play. He didn't play any. you got to look at the guy on the field. And they haven't done their job. As simple as that.
Well, and John Fox has said this too, and you know this as well as anybody, Coach. It's a results-based business. And whether maybe you don't have, they didn't give you the tools to win, but it all comes down to at the end, they look at the record and say, well, we got it. We can't fire the entire team, so we got to go after the coach, right?
You're 100% right. He becomes a vulnerable guy. There's no question. It's easy to change a coach. When you change a coach, then you can come back to the fan base and say, okay, we got a new coaching staff coming in. There's going to be a lot of excitement next year. We're going to get back on the right track, things like that. But, I mean, I've been in the business too long. Sit here and say it's your fault. You're silly. I mean, you really are silly. But I mean, I guess you got to blame somebody.
Sure.
You would never blame the players, would you? Hell no! Don't do that.
Nope.
Hey, let's look at some of the positives here.
Yeah.
Tariq Cohn, a kid that really is running well, and if it not were for a couple of penalties, probably would have had more touchdown returns this year. Just, what would you have been able to do with a guy like Tariq Cohn, and how would you have played him?
I'll tell you, when you got a guy like that in your special teams and your return teams that can bring the ball back like he does, I mean, you change the whole game, because a field position is a big part of football. I mean, when you are kicking off with somebody, you don't expect them to score on you. And when you can get, and even when you're kicking off, your goal is to keep them inside the 25-yard line. And when they get out to midfield and past midfield, then you got a problem, because your defense is not going to be hold up. It comes down to field position. The better your field position, usually the better results you get.
Was it with the Pro Bowl selections coming out this week, were you surprised that there were no Bears on the team? And if you were selecting, were there a couple guys that you would have put on there?
Well, I haven't watched it close enough, but yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I just think it's I look at a lot of things. I mean, the Pro Bowl, can I tell you honestly now?
Mm-hmm.
The Pro Bowl doesn't mean a darn thing. I'll tell you what matters: playoffs and the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, you don't play the game to get in the Pro Bowl. If you're fortunate enough to be made called All Pro or be called one of the best in the league, God bless you. That's great. But your goal when you go out there is to be a winner, to play on a winning team, to win championships, to win your division, to beat the Packers, to beat Minnesota, to beat Detroit. That should be your goal. That division is what you – if you can control that division, you've got a chance to be a pretty darn good football team.
So what do you think – what do the Bears need to do in this offseason? You're seeing that we got a nice groundwork with Trubisky. What do they need to do? Where do the changes need to come?
I like both quarterbacks. I mean, I know they got a good running game. I think at times they play outstanding defense. I think it's the whole package. They're going to analyze it. Whoever comes in or if John's there, he's going to ask. And they're going to look at it. Here's what we did wrong. Here's what we did right. But, my God, if you look at the Bears and you look at some other teams in the league, these guys can run the football. They play pretty darn good defense. They've lost some games that maybe they should have won. There's no question about that. But you can't, you know, you can't just go wholesale and say, oh, we're going to change everything. No, you know, you can't change everything. You can't get rid of everything. You know, you'll make some changes where you need to make them. But this is the organization is sound. The things they do, I mean, like I said, you know, they can run the ball. They've got a good running back. I mean, I love the quarterbacks. Both of them, they play pretty good. They got some good receivers. Just put it all together. Get everybody to play with some pride. It's important. You know, football, it's a great living. You know, make a lot of money doing it. But you really, really are fulfilled when you can win championships. And yeah. I've been fortunate. I've been in positions where, you know, no one remembers back to 1963, but I do. And the Bears won a championship in 1963. We beat the Giants, and that was a big, big deal. Because that was our goal. And that was George Halas's goal, and we won it. And we won it in 85 because we had a darn good football team. And it's fun. When you win, it's fun. You know, I was in Dallas when we won Super Bowls as a player and a coach. And you know, it's why you play the game. You don't play the game to participate and take home a paycheck. You play the game to win, to get on top, to be the best. And, you know, and then I don't have an answer for it, guys. If I did, I'd certainly wave a wand and make it happen. But they've got a lot of work. They've got to do some soul searching, and they got a lot of work ahead of them.
And, Coach, you know, fans are emotionally invested. It's a business, but for fans, it helps us get through the day. It's part of our lives, and so we feel differently about it than people on the inside. When you say success comes from the top up, is there that desire? You played for George Halas. They wanted to win. The McCaskies, do they have that same burning desire now?
Well, I would hope so. I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, why would you play any sport or any game? Desire to win. That's the object. That's the goal. I mean, you know, I go back and I one of the most my first contract ever signed. I was sitting with George Halas, and after I signed the contract, he said, "And don't forget, we have to beat the Packers twice." And I looked at him like I didn't know what he was talking about. I'm from Pittsburgh. We have to beat the Packers twice. Well, that's how that important that was to him.
Yeah.
You know, and then I understood what the importance of when I played there. But to me, it's not a sometime thing. It's not a part-time job. It's a full-time job. Do it. Do it the best you can, and do it with pride. Do it with integrity, and leave it all on the field. Let's see what happens.
Now, Monday's Christmas. What's a Ditka Christmas tradition?
Well, I'm probably going to light up a cigar. I'll be sitting here and watch some football. I'm watching a Western right now.
Nice.
And, there's not much that I do anymore. I play golf all day today, and I enjoy it. I'm in Florida, and I'll be here until May probably. And, I'm no good at golf, but I love to play. It's competition. You know, I'm competing with myself. I'm going, every once in a while, I hit it where I aim it, and I make a good shot. And then I say, okay, I got it now.
There you go.
It's gone.
That's how golf gets you. They give you a couple good shots, and you figure you got it down, and then you keep playing.
Yeah, then you make about a 20-foot putt, and then you miss a 2-foot putt.
that's the breaks of the game, right?
It sounds about right. Well, Coach, have a wonderful Christmas. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to you guys, everybody at WGN. Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas, Coach. Thanks a lot. That is, of course, very, very enjoyable. Well, you know, we were lamenting earlier that we didn't get anything from our coworkers. So what I did was I went up and I jimmied the lock on Rose's office door, and I stole his prize list because it's Christmas. And I couldn't, Judy, in good conscience be here the Friday before Christmas and not give something away.
That is absolutely true.
It goes against my holly jolly
and
nature.
Stealing is always okay on the holidays.
Well, is it stealing if I give it to somebody else?
No.
No, Rose was supposed to give it away. He didn't give it away.
Right, so fair game.
Right, and not to say that what I'm giving you has been sitting in Rose's office, because a lobster gram that has been sitting in Rose's office forever would be tainted like my love.
Just a little smelly.
Yeah, well, you know, you'd know it was coming, and nobody'd steal it off your porch. which is always a benefit this time of year.
Right, because everything's getting stolen off the porch.
So, Camille, what I'm going to ask you to do is clear the lines. People are getting, oh, they're all up in arms. They think they know what, how to win this this Lobstergram. It's a $100 gift card, by the way, to Lobstergram, the original lobster delivery, and the perfect holiday gift. Order Lobstergram with free overnight shipping until the end of the year with code WGN. Just call 1-800-LIVE-LOB or visit lobstergram.com. How are you going to get this Lobstergram from me? Well, I'll tell you, you must answer this simple Christmas trivia question. Before Frank Capra came aboard to direct the movie It's a Wonderful Life, which Violetta has never seen, and I hope before I talk to you on Tuesday you have viewed it, the part of George Bailey was going to be played by what silver screen legend? Before Frank Capra came aboard to direct It's a Wonderful Life, the part of George Bailey was going to be played by what silver-screened legend? The first correct answer at 312-981-7200, you will be eating lobster on us or giving lobster to someone. Wow, the lines lit up. Judy, do you know the answer to this? Don't say it.
I think so.
Violetta?
I'm not going to lie, no.
I just wanted to ask you so nobody accused me of leaving you out. Andy?
Not a clue.
All right. We'll see if Judy is correct. Until then, it is all, we talked about this yesterday. Now, Judy, since we didn't get to ask you this yesterday, is there some holiday viewing that you must partake in over this next few days?
Are you in a movie?
Yeah, movie, TV special, one of the old Rankin Bass.
I have watched pieces of Elf. Like, for the past 2 weeks, it's so funny.
Elf is hilarious.
And then, for some reason, I keep going back to the scene where he's picking the gum off the subway, which makes me want to puke. I always seem to join it at that time. Yes, Elf. I do love Elf.
Elf is great. I'll tell you what. You want a nice double feature? You watch Elf, and then you watch Bad Santa right after it.
Because it's like good too.
It's like having a nice sorbet and then a straight shot of bourbon. it's a beautiful yin-yang for Christmas.
And I love A Christmas Story.
Oh,
I do love it.
So do I. And I got into an argument with a number of people this week who hate A Christmas Story.
Why? Do they?
I don't know.
I feel like they think it's not worthy. It's not historic enough.
Their argument was that it's everything horrible happens to Ralphie and the kids in this movie, so how can it be a holly jolly Christmas movie if the entire thing is misery?
This is what I mean about when people were complaining about me bashing Charlie Brown. That same thing.
Well, were you bashing Charlie? Oh,
well,
Charlie Brown,
yeah,
the special?
All of them.
Oh.
I know you're playing some of that music.
I like, well, yeah, and I like
it's the same concept, but in the end, it's all good.
Right, everything comes together.
It all goes Rudolph in the end, as I like to say.
Wow. We'll take that out of context. I think we have a winner. Let's see. Hello, Carol. Oh, wait.
Hi there, Brian.
So what do you think the answer to this question is? Before Frank Capra came aboard to direct It's a Wonderful Life, the part of George Bailey was going to be played by what silver screen legend?
Cary Grant.
Cary Grant is absolutely correct. Very good. Woo-hoo! Now, is this something you've known for a long time or something you Googled quickly when I asked the question?
I actually have done the radio drama of It's a Wonderful Life and somehow knew it in the back of my mind when you said it.
Very nice. Now, Judy, was that your answer?
No.
Wow.
I was thinking Gary Cooper, but I think I meant Cary Grant.
Well, sure. I'm sure that's what you meant.
Yeah, that's Cary
Grant.
Yeah.
Gary Cooper, the big cowboy.
I just heard it recently.
I thought maybe Clark Gable. I get those two mixed up.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a good guess, too. But you were absolutely right. Cary Grant.
Woo-hoo!
Carol. Yeah. Oh, that's what we need. Isolate that. The woo-hoo. You're getting a $100 gift card to Lobstergram. What do you think of that?
Oh, my gosh. Lobster.
That's what we like to hear from our winners. Enthusiasm,
awesome.
Carol.
Thank you.
It's the original lobster delivery of the perfect holiday gift. Order Lobstergram with free overnight shipping until the end of the year with code WGN. Just call 1-800-LIVE-LOB or visit lobstergram.com. Carol, you don't have to do any of that because we're going to send you that $100 gift card. Are you going to re-gift that or are you going to use it yourself?
Oh, are you kidding? New Year's Eve is coming up. Lobster.
Boom. Well, enjoy it. Congratulations. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Hang on, and Camille will get all your information. All right. There we go. Look at that.
She was a great winner.
Doesn't it bother you when you give somebody a prize and they're like,
thanks, yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Listen, Mope, we just gave you something.
Is that it?
Get excited. Yeah. Is that it?
Or, I mean, they're excited, but it's this excitement. Thank you.
Yeah. They're very polite.
Yeah.
No, if you win something from me, I'm happy to give it to you. Go completely berserk. I want screaming. I want people to think that you need to be committed.
I'll do that if you give me a Lobstergram.
Wow. I might get you a lobster grab just to see you go completely berserk. In a nice way, not your usual way. All right, let's do this. Then it's news time on WGN. Oh, it's Brian in for Rowan Anna, and it is time for the Knarble Wagon, sponsored by It's Just Lunch. And today on the Knarble Wagon, I am happy to welcome in Exit Strategy Brewing Company, which is in Forest Park on Madison Street. Chris and Catherine Vallow are here. First of all, welcome. We're glad you're here. It's very exciting to have you. I've sampled your beer at the Berwyn Brewfest. I've been to the place. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. Forest Park's only, or first and only brewery, which is, that says something right there.
First and only, and thank you so much for having us. First and only brew pub in Forest Park, and the only one kind of sort of allowed there, which is great.
Oh.
Yeah, we're a tiny town.
We don't
need
so the only one. Yeah, you don't need how
not
many. How many more do you need?
No, I mean really,
one
just
is.
One.
Yeah,
I think
one's
that's
enough.
Good.
Your story is fascinating to me, and I love stories about people who are established. They've got good careers going. Things are going right, but they have a dream, and they say to themselves, "You know what? This job is for the birds. I want to follow my dreams." And Chris, you were an attorney, and Catherine, you were a teacher, right?
Correct.
That is correct.
So how does it? How do you end up now owning the Exit Strategy Brewing?
So we started thinking about this probably in early 2012, and then it was kind of joint decision to kind of get into home brewing, and so we just started with a couple of just basic books and kits and started churning out some like just kit beers, and then pretty quickly on we decided to kind of move past that, getting into all grain, and then by batch number 5 we were on our own original recipes, and that was that was the first batch of Persephone, which is one of our flagships, pomegranate wheat that, you know, it was the first original recipe that I ever designed, had made it, sent it off to a homebrew competition. It won its like fruit beer category. It's like, oh, okay, maybe I'm not terrible at this. So we just took it from there.
So you weren't a chemistry lawyer. You were just a straight up lawyer. So where does this come from? Did you mix things up as a child? Were you?
No, not at all. It was actually Catherine's idea to give me a hobby, and so it was kind of like
running was great for this one, but yeah, needed something to.
Oh, this is a much better hobby than running.
Well, I mean, the running is great and whatever, but your knees can only take so much.
Right.
And,
then you need to sit down and have a beer.
Yeah.
And what did you teach, Catherine?
I was all over the board. I taught 5th grade for 6 years, and the last 6 of my career, I was the differentiation coach for my district, along with the gifted coordinator, and
wow.
I taught Latin.
Oh, my God. I took 4 years of Latin in high school.
Yeah, I hear that from so many people. Oh, I took Latin. I remember none of it.
I can do the Our Father.
Me too.
That's pretty much it. That's all I could do.
Yeah.
All right. So now you start out, you're homebrewing, then you start winning some prizes. That's pretty cool. You think to yourself, yeah, I got the hang of this. How do you two then talk and decide, all right, we're going to give up stable careers, lawyer and teacher, pretty much you're always going to be working, and roll the dice and say, we're going to start a brewery.
So we just kind of sat down and started drafting a business plan, and that part of it took probably a year and a half. We knew we wanted to set up shop in the town where we lived. The space that we were looking at had been vacant for probably 10, 12 years, and then we had our eye on that space, and I just kept making batches, sending things out, just kind of churning away the business plan, and it took like a year and a half to write that thing, and then we just put all the pieces together and then just decided, all right, well, let's pull the trigger on this.
We were sitting at Greenbush Brewing in Sawyer, Michigan, and kind of looked around, and we were like, these guys are having a really good time.
Yeah.
We make okay beer. We could have a really good time. Let's do this.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having a really good time.
No. No.
Nothing wrong at all. All right, we're going to get into some of the beers. But for those who haven't been to Exit Strategy, what I liked about your place, because there's some people who, you know, they're not crazy about beer.
Right.
And they're like, oh, if we're going to go to a brew pub, there's nothing. You guys have cocktails, you have wine, you have handcrafted soda, and you have an unbelievable food menu.
Thank you so much. We do. We started off and actually conditioned our clientele really well for the first 18 months to just expect beer. That's what you got. You got beer, you got soda, you got water.
That's it.
We expanded from there kind of based on the community that we're in and hearing from a lot of people, I don't drink beer, but I really like that you guys are here.
Right.
So how can I like do that? So we started honestly with beer cocktails.
Okay.
We started mixing our beer with different things and kind of creating toned down versions of beer. And then this one over here finally won the wine debate and said, we got to bring wine in. And
there
I was
go.
The stubborn one. I love wine. I was the stubborn one that said, we're not doing it, we're not doing it, we're not doing it. We brought in a really, really beautiful 7-bottle wine list. And then from there, went into a batched cocktail program.
Okay.
We're not a typical bar. We're not a typical bar at all. We don't keep bottles behind the bar, none of that. So we don't do custom mixing of any kind.
Right.
We've got 5 batched cocktails at any time ready to go. And we're proud of them. We're also the only joint on the street and in Forest Park, to my knowledge, that's doing any kind of a batched program, which is nice. I mean, everything is hand done by us. It's all mixed in the morning. It's pull out a pitcher, measure it out and go. I mean, so quick, so easy.
Yeah, everything moves very smoothly. Exit Strategy Brewing Company is at 7700 Madison Street in Forest Park. You can go to exitstrategybrewing.com. Their phone number is 708-689-8771. We're going to take a quick break, do some traffic, and then we're going to sample some of these fine beers you brought in. So Violetta, Judy, Andy, get down here because I'm very thirsty. I've been talking a lot, and I'm a little dehydrated, so I don't know how much I can save for you. The Narble Wagon is rolling. The good folks from Exit Strategy Brewing are with me, Chris and Catherine Vallow. Exit Strategy Brewing Company, 7700 Madison Street in Forest Park. As we've learned, they have somehow told the government there will be no more brew pubs in Forest Park. There is only one, and that's all that's needed. They've got...
No, it's a thing.
You're there, and it's wonderful. Not only beer. They have wonderful beer, which we're getting into now. Batch cocktails. They have wine. They have handcrafted soda. So the night I was in there, there were families in there because the food is wonderful. And then you've got beer aficionados in there. And you mentioned having fun, and you were working behind the bar that night, Catherine.
I was.
And this is before I knew who you were. This woman is having fun. You guys got it down. This is the life.
It's not bad. It's not bad. A life lived in beer is all
hard,
right.
Hard work, but a lot of fun.
Oh, it's way fun to be behind the bar. It's awesome.
So she's got a good bar personality.
Yeah, well, listen, it's good to have front of the house people, and then the mad chemist in the back creating all the beers that are on the board. When somebody comes into Exit Strategy for the first time, you've got everything listed. What's the stable of beers? You always have a certain amount that are always there, right?
So we have a core portfolio of 12 beers that kind of run the gamut from light to dark, blondes to stouts, and we tried to kind of craft that so there's something for everybody. We don't focus on one particular style. We're not really like ape or IPA heavy or Belgian heavy or anything like that. So we have, I think, a really well-rounded portfolio.
We're really balanced, and when we get people in who have either never been with us or never been to a brewery, I mean, with us being kind of one of the first ones in that particular area, when they first come in and it's all right, well, talk me through what you're doing here, we go through a nice little introduction. We have an all-ale portfolio. We've got our umbrella beer, Knob Locked Out. It's our blonde ale. It's got a great story behind its name. And we can start there with any, especially non-beer drink. I don't like beer. I only do Miller Lite. And then I kind of give them a look. And then we talk a little bit more. And then we get onto the blonde ale and we work our way from there. But we're really, really well balanced. It's something that I've always been very, very proud of. Super proud of how Chris brews everything. When we get into talking about the beers, we can talk more about it. But everything he does finishes very cleanly. Nothing is a palate wrecker. Nothing hangs around your mouth forever. Nothing lingers to the point where you can't have another style. You can drink as much as you want of his delicious goodness and not have a competitive palate, which I think is a very, very cool thing and speaks to how well he's done as
that should be
brewer.
Your t-shirt, drink my delicious goodness.
I feel I like mean... we tried it. We tried it.
Yeah?
I think Zazzle said no.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate. So what's this first one that we are trying?
We're trying Persephone. Persephone is our firstborn child. Uh-huh. She's got a gender to how she is. She just does. So Persephone is our pomegranate wheat. Really tart, really tangy. When we say pomegranate wheat, we get a lot of folks who are like, oh, I don't do fruit beers. It's not a fruit beer.
I was going to say, because I am a guy who does not...
Right.
I'm not a big sour guy. I know that trend was out there, and I'm not real into fruit. But this does not have either one of those characteristics to an extent where I would be like...
It's more of a hidden, almost acidic tang that you get. We use pomegranate molasses. Which I think is very cool. Right. It's real distinctive. It's a really neat way to infuse that beer, and it was something that we thought about at home.
Well, and I think that was part of the objective, and it's the objective with a lot of our beers is I want something to be present but not overpowering. It's kind of like the notion of if you have a fruit beer that's, pick another fruit, blueberry, and it's just chock full of blueberry, and a lot of times you're like, oh, that's awesome. You managed to get a ton of blueberry in here, I never want to drink this again.
Right. Where's the beer part?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I could drink blueberry juice and it'd be the same kind of thing.
So it's nice to have that presence there of it's not too tart, it's not overly sweet. Like, the fruit is there, but it's not lingering, it's not overpowering, and that's
there's enough of it there to get the you get what it's doing, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. like you said, you're not hitting the face with it and going, I didn't come out for fruit, I came out for beer.
Right.
You know? So this was your first. This
Those
is the one
first.
you brewed up at home, mm-hmm. and has it stayed the same, or did you make any kind of once you had to move it from, hey, I made some on the stove, to now I'm making it in giant barrels in the back of my place? How does that change it?
Yeah, it's pretty much the exact same recipe as it was when we were doing it at home. The only thing we had to do was just scale it up.
Okay.
And it's more or less a straight line, but it was going from 5 gallons to 150 plus gallons. So I'm sort of like, well, that much molasses.
Yeah, when you have to do stuff, is there a point where sometimes a recipe, you'll go, oh, this is great, small, and then as you scale it up, something in the chemistry changes and it's like, ugh, what happened?
Yeah, definitely. The grain utilization is really kind of a straight line. I mean, you're trying to extract a certain amount of sugar out of grain, so you do have to calculate how efficient your system is. Like, how much weight of grain do I need to get the same gravity or, you know, sugar out of my wort? But with hops, that's not a straight line. So you do have to – we've definitely played with that in terms of changing up timing of hop additions. If we've made a beer and we think, well, that batch is a little more bitter than we want it, so we'll back off these additions or change the timing of them in terms of, like, weight or how long they're in the boil.
Perfect.
So that's a little bit of trial and error. But we've really been pretty successful in getting all of our batches on without any major catastrophes.
And they really do all taste like they tasted at home when we were sitting there filling bottles on the kitchen floor. And I mean, it's waiting
hours.
A couple weeks, you're like, what? We were sitting
hours and hours.
Hours and hours.
Chris and Catherine Vallow are here. They are the owners of Exit Strategy Brewing in Forest Park, 7700 Madison Street. Go to exitstrategybrewing.com. Since we're getting out early today because of Northwestern basketball, we're going to extend the Carnarba Wagon, try a couple more beers, talk to these guys. They've got a really cool brunch coming up on New Year's Eve Day, so we'll talk about that. And we'll do all of that after we do this. And then Judy gives us the big story on WGN. Carnarba Wagon extended tonight because we are out of here in about 5 minutes for a Northwestern basketball. So in 5 minutes, I need to continue the conversation with Chris and Catherine Vallow from Exit Strategy Brewing, which is at 7700 Madison Street in Forest Park. We've talked about the Persephone, the pomegranate wheat, which was your initial beer, the baby of the beers. And now you have poured your double IPA, which has a wonderful name that we will change just a little bit for on air, because it has one name. If you go into the brew pub, you'll hear everybody giggling and ordering it.
Yes.
And one, because it's a wonderful beer, but two, it has quite the fun name.
It does.
But for on-air purposes, what would you like to call your double IPA?
We can refer to it as JD. Everyone will know it as JD, which is a fine, I mean, just
yes,
its initials. JD's also refer to him as Critical Richard. either way will work.
Sure.
We're just so used to saying JD all the time.
It's very fun. IPAs are very popular, and it's one of those beers where people either love them or they're like, it's too much. So where do you draw the line? How'd you decide it? Was it, again, with you talking about balance? All the beers at Exit Strategy have a nice balance.
So yeah, I think balance in an IPA is probably the most critical part of the construction of the beer. I mean, in terms of, because you can have beers that are just absolute palate wreckers where you're getting nothing but just an insane amount of bitterness, and you get nothing out of them except bitter.
Yes, and that's what turns me off to a lot of IPAs, is they're just way bleh.
Exactly. I mean, and I think the way we've approached,
that was a flattering picture, Kathy.
The way we've approached our beers, especially the hop forward ones, are let's maximize the flavor and aroma that the hops are intended to deliver to a beer without killing people with the IBUs and or the bitterness.
Is there a point, because you know better than anybody, a lot of places we put in all these hops, is there a point of no return where you've reached the point of hoppiness and you can add a ton more, but it doesn't make any difference?
Yeah, and I think that's, so like a lot of what's going on with like those Northeast style IPAs, which we really don't make, those things are so weirdly constructed, and I didn't really know what they were, and I started looking into it. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But I mean, you're talking about dry hopping those things at 5 pounds per barrel, 6 pounds per barrel. I mean, we do 1 pound per barrel.
Yeah.
Wow.
For, and that's for really nice like dry hop additions. Yes. You get a lot of flavor and aroma out of it. But the those beers then become very expensive to make because of the price of very popular aroma and flavor hops, like such as, you know, Mosaic or Eldorado or Zacca or whatnot.
I think one of the cool things about our IPAs and one of the greatest compliments that we get at the tap room is people that come in and they go, I don't do them. Is it a pale ale? Is it a, nope, not even a little bit. And they were like, all right, but here's the thing. And I start them out with Exit Strategy, which is our flagship.
The namesake, yeah.
Yeah, it's our namesake. If it were a candle, I would burn it all day long. It smells amazing. And it's actually how I entered the world of hops, because Chris was like, we can't do this if you're not completely versed in everything. And I was not a hoppy beer drinker. But the minute you start to explain everything and you kind of think of it almost like wine, where you get the notes of wine and you get all of the different characteristics, you can do the same thing with beer. And when people come in and they say, I don't do hoppy beers, we go, all right, you don't think you do, but have you ever hung out outside? Do you like how outside smells? Because that's how, like,
it
do
depends
you like
where I am outside.
Right. Do you like gardening? Because hops will smell like, they smell earthy, they smell green, they smell beautiful. And like, wrap your head around that before you go, oh, they're so bitter, they're so bitter. Have you ever had unsweetened tea? Like, if you can, do you drink coffee black? Like, these are other...
I'm sold. Andy, you sold?
Right. Like,
there's the pitch.
Yeah. Once you start to kind of assimilate, like, your taste buds already recognize this. So you can do it in beer if you can do it in other places.
All right. We only have 2 minutes left. That's okay. So you brought a milk stout, which is... I told you this off the air. I love dark beers. All the dark beers that I had at Exit Strategy were wonderful, and I tried the milk stout, and it is
on point,
no doubt about it. Real quick, tell us about the New Year's Day brunch.
New Year's Eve Day
New
brunch.
Year's Eve Day brunch.
Yeah, so December 31st, New Year's Eve Day, will be open from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are just blowing it up with a really cool brunch that day. We're going to have a special brunch menu that's going to feature half of our bestsellers from our standard Sunday brunch menu, and then some one-day-only specials that we're actually not going to release because they're going to be super cool. We're going to do bottomless mimosas. We're going to do a choose-your-own-adventure bloody bar.
Oh, my.
You can do a Bloody Mary, do a Bloody Maria, do a Bloody Baron.
It's a lot
of bloodies. We are taking reservations only through email.
Oh.
So they go straight to myself, right. So I can
Where do people email this?
Info, I-N-F-O, at exitstrategybrewing.com.
All right.
Reservations for parties of 4 or more.
All right. 4 or more. Exit Strategy Brewing, 11 to 4, New Year's Eve Day.
New Year's Eve Day.
The big brunch. Go there. But you guys are open. Give us your regular hours.
We are open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. We are open Friday from 3 p.m. till midnight. We are open Saturday from 11 a.m. to midnight and Sunday from 11 to 4. Last call happens around 20 minutes before close on each day.
Perfect. Go to exitstrategybrewing.com to get all the information. Thank you, Chris and Catherine Avallo, for coming in. Thank you, Andy and Judy and Violetta and Camille and everybody. It is time for us to go, which is nice because there's beer here, Andy. So when we get to leave early, that just means
cheers.
A little more drinking time for us. Have a wonderful Christmas. I will talk to you again Tuesday afternoon in for Rowanetta.